From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Designer David Culp sees the garden in layers, but not just the most obvious landscape ones most of us do, meaning the canopy, the shrub layer, and ground covering plants. His view of the garden is more like 3D chess and then some, layers of color, texture, shape, and even the layer of time. He's here to offer some advice for looking at our garden's many aspects with an eye to strengthening the overall impact. More in a moment, but first this message.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
David Culp has been making his own two-acre garden in Pennsylvania for about 30 growing seasons, yet he still looks to tweak it regularly to continue to fine-tune. David, a longtime teacher at Longwood Gardens, is lately teaching online in popular monthly webinars hosted by Jim Peterson, the publisher of Garden Design, with their next one coming up November 11th. He's the author of The Layered Garden, Design Lessons for Year-Round Beauty from Brandywine Cottage, and a follow-up book last year, A Year at Brandywine Cottage, Six Seasons of Beauty, Bounty, and Blooms. Hi, David. How are you?
Good morning, Margaret. It's a flurry of activity here around the cottage.
Yes, I know, right? It's time because we're having frost, aren't we?
Exactly.
So I hope you're ready to help us all needy types with some of your garden design insights so that help us with some of our issues. But before we start, I just want to say, let's have a giveaway of your more recent book, A Year at Brandywine Cottage, with the transcript of this show over on awaytogarden.com. People love a giveaway, so let's do that. And I've been enjoying the book. And your older book, I went back to that one as well recently and got a lot out of it. So as I said in the intro, you see the garden as a place of many layers, and that was the subject of your 2012 book, The Layered Garden. So what are all these layers? You really see, you have some kind of special glasses on.
Yes, I think I do, but it's nothing that I have a patent on. I think everyone has them at their fingertips. They just need to be aware of them, okay? And I'm just help try to give you something to think about possibilities when looking at your garden.
Yeah. So layers, meaning, again, not just the canopy and the middle layer and the ground cover layer, the physical layers, but like color, layers of color and layers of what else?
Well, when Timber asked me to write this book and suggested The Layered Garden, I thought, well, gee, you know, there are some obvious answers to that, but would you let me address all the layers that I can think of, which had to do with first maybe succession planning. Now that's an obvious layer is succession, but then there's layers of the space, as you mentioned, the ground layer, the herbaceous layer, the shrub layer, the small tree, the large tree layer. All those spaces need to be addressed, either making compositions within that layer, but having those different spatial layers relate to one another as well.
Mm-hmm.
There is the layer of time. My
right.
garden looks, and I'm sure all of us who've been gardening for a while, looks different through time. Not only the way plants live, grow, and die, but the way our taste level changes in time too. We're constantly being influenced by what we see. So you look at your garden, what are the possibilities when you plant that perennial, when you plant that drift of bulbs, that tree, what's it going to look like in relation to your garden 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road, you know?
And yeah, and boy, oh boy, don't we, a lot of us, and I hate to use the word mistakes because it sounds critical, and it's just, a lot of us don't think about that layer, as you're calling it, of time, and we plant too close or plant too much, you know, get a little overenthusiastic. So thinking about that as well, not just the now, but, you know, time, both all the different seasons to come and how the plants will look in those, but then also as they age, right?
Absolutely, and we've all done that. But gardening is a process, and I like that process. So yes, I agree with you. I mean, we don't look at it as a mistake. Look at it as a way to garden, a way to learn. You know, think of all the cooks who burnt the toast before they made it to the kitchen. Okay, we all are learning things, even after 30 years. I'm still learning things, and that's what I like about our profession.
Right.
Another layer, I think, it's the emotional layer. Dare I say that? What that your garden conveys as an emotional response to viewers. You need to think about that as well, and that's going to vary to every listener here today, because you're putting your own idea of what you want in your garden. A way to start on that one is find out what you like best about nature and try to reestablish that thought or emotion in your garden. So that's the layer of emotion. You know, if there's some things in the garden that go beyond vision, there's an emotional response that you have to looking at a thistle. Oh, ouch, I might get there's things like that. Those are all different layers that you can consider when making a garden.
Right. So in a way, what I'm hearing, there's layers of, as you say, succession, and there's layers of time in the sense of, thinking into the future as things grow. There's this emotional layer. There's layers of color, of shapes, textures.
Absolutely. Shape.
So shapes is an interesting one, and I've confessed this to you. You told me when we worked on a, for people who don't know, we worked on a, maybe a month or so ago, a New York Times garden column together about layering the layers of the garden and so forth, and about your work. And, and afterward, I was thinking, you shared with me in that you have a lot of sort of vertical linear shapes in your garden, and I'll ask you to explain that in a second. And I was thinking, well, what's my signature shape in my garden? And I confess to you that it's amoeba. Margaret's amoeba garden. But by that I mean, in reflection, after talking to you about signature shape, it sounds silly, like I'm making fun of myself, but I'm on an undulating, very hilly, sensuously curved site, right? So if I tried to make Versailles here 30 years ago, with rigid linear, geometry, it wouldn't have worked. So everything I'm attracted to is kind of, lumpy shaped plants and beds with irregular curving edges. And it kind of fits. So that's one of my layers.
Well, that's exactly what I want people to do is, first of all, you kind of like assess the site.
Right.
Are your strengths. Move from your strengths, something that you like. And shape is very, very important. As a plantsman, my tendency is to plants, but we need to find things to give our gardens, and they're right, you have probably heard it a thousand times, is to give our garden unity. You can do that with color, by repetition of color. You can do that by repetition of shape or by repetition of a certain genera. That helps string your garden together and give it a theme. Shape was often overlooked due to the 90s garden writers about colors. Yeah, color is very important to me. Absolutely. But there's also the underlining physics and geometry of a garden. And I had a lot of trees. I had a wooded lot. I had a vertical to begin with. The lines of my house were somewhat simple and plain. So I decided to put a vertical shape as a signature shape, not so much that you would say, oh, what are all these spiky things in the garden? But it makes everything a little more unified, which is especially good for gardeners here in the Northeast because we have snow in the winter, and a vertical shape will stand out in the wintertime as well as the summer. So I did that repetition of shape, throughout the garden, actually a repetition of color as well. And I think verticals, to me, link the earth to the sky. You know, they're one of the most dramatic shapes that you have. Think of, you know, hold up your thumb. You know, it's a very strong vertical shape. So
right.
If you want your garden to have a lot of statement, you'll perhaps think about adding vertical elements to it.
Right, exclamations. So they came from not only some linear plants, but they came from other choices, like the way that you stake and support things and so forth?
Well, it's, again, repetition, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
When they said that years ago. I have a picket fence. How iconic Americana, right?
Right.
But it's a vertical. I have, in my veg, I have vertical elements like my bean poles. I have rose pillars. I have rose tutures, which are rather slender and vertical. I have a large selection of vertical plants. I had a friend come over and say, well, at least you're consistent. And
me with the amoebas, you with the verticals.
and so I'm on a hillside. I have a horizontal hillside.
Right.
So the intersection of the vertical with that hillside gives me lots of energy in my garden, I feel. So it's those intersection of planes that I like to consider as well in my design.
Right. Right. So we have to, when we look at, go out and look around, we have to really think about things that may have been unconscious when we first started doing it, but we, in a way, we have to make it a little bit conscious in order to improve upon it, right? It has to be a little more deliberate to do the tweaking, I think.
It's refine, refine, refine.
Right, 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 right. And the color, the layer of color, I think you told me that at Brandywine Cottage, your color palette changes through the seasons, which makes sense. Where do we look for clues to sort of improve or strengthen our color story, you know, in our gardens? Like, where do you look for, you know, I mean, it's, you know, in some design books, it might say, oh, the color of the house, the color, you know what I mean? Where do you look for clues?
Well, I do like change. I would be bored to tears if my garden never changed. Mm-hmm. The last thing I want my garden to be is my least favorite four-letter word. It's D-U-L-L, doll.
Right.
So I like change. I think we tend to repeat colors that we like subconsciously. If you look around your home, you'll see that you tend towards pastels, you tend towards bright. That gives you an idea of where the colors you would like outside. You've probably already given an indication on the interior. So you start there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it varies seasonally as well because of the angle of the light. The bright, clear light of early spring to the raking light of fall helps lead you to different color choices. Now, your idea might be to contrast them. Your idea might be to repeat them, but that's where the personality of the gardener comes in.
Mm. Yeah. Years ago, friends who are garden designers were visiting and they said, you know, oh, you have this big, well, biggish, I'm in a state park. I mean, I'm surrounded by sort of state park and forest and stuff like this. There's a lot of long views. And they were like, well, to lead your eye to the long views, why don't you use some gold foliage things at a distance and along the way, like, you know, sort of mark the alley, so to speak, you know, these view sheds and pull the eye out to the distance to say, hey, look over here. Don't just look close up, look out here. And that was really helpful to me. Like the idea that, you know, gold color, I mean, I think I might've overdone it, you know, too much maybe, but it does. It's certain colors scream, right? And certain colors are quieter and they can help you make a space feel bigger or smaller too, I think.
Absolutely. I did the same thing. I have a white, you know, Pennsylvania stucco farmhouse. So I use the color white, which to repeat and delete the eye. White's a very, very, very bright color.
Mm-hmm.
Most like you use Jell-O. I used white that way because I was repeating what I had in the color of my house. And I live in a little valley, so I needed a bright color to just lighten things up. As you use Jell-O, I used white.
Mm-hmm.
It scares a lot of photographers because it's a hard color to capture. And I know it's not, but white is just so bright. It lightens up things that it's next to, okay? You put it next to a pink, and just everything appears brighter with the use of white.
Right.
That's what I use. You might want to, and you have to consider the time you view your garden, the time of day you view your garden the most. If you're a 9-to-5-er, or now you're, a lot of us are at home, you want colors that are cheery and reflect the time of day, that stand out in the evening.
Right.
Stand out in the morning.
True, true. I didn't think about that, but yes, you're absolutely right, right.
And if you live in an area with lots of rainfall or, cloudy or not like we have in the unpredictable Northeast, you're going to select colors that work in that climatic area, that the climate, the Pacific Northwest, for instance. We'll use a brighter color palette.
Right. A few weeks back, I was thinking about you because I noticed, and I don't know if this happens in a lot of your clients' gardens or in your own garden as well. I was thinking about our earlier conversations about color because you had said something when we were doing the time story. I think it was about at this time of year, like looking up to the canopy layer, and you might see a particular shade of gold, happening at this time of year, and then looking for like perennials at the lower layer that complement that, like, might see, say, Amsonia that might turn the same time as some of the maples do, and it would be a harmony, from top to bottom and so forth. And I had this moment where I noticed, and of course they were nowhere near each other in my garden, but I noticed two plants that were doing a similar color story at the same time. Phlox, I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's like Jeana, J-E-A-N-A. Mm-hmm. With that sort of orchidy lilac purple color flower, and far away in a different area of the garden, sedum, and again, I don't know how to pronounce this one, Lidakense or something, Lidakense, which has blue leaves and then the same orchid purpley pink flowers, and they were flowering at the same time. And I thought, well, Margaret, why are they 50 feet apart? Why don't you make a color story with these? And I was thinking of you because you were kind of saying, go out all the time and look for those things and then unite them, right? And make, pump up the volume, so to speak. So I don't know. That's just my little example. So you taught me that.
Well, thanks. That's what this is all about, is gardener sharing. And that's what I like these conversations, because we're always learning something, and it doesn't help to relearn certain things as well. Repetition of color. I always take my cues. I like to look around at Mother Nature. What's going on in the outside world? And again, like you just explained, uniting those, that it's, you're maximizing your effort because you're using what Mother Nature gives you or what your garden gives you, and then working from that, like the color of the phlox.
Right, and moving
color of an Amsonia. Yeah. Up yeah. to a sugar maple, or you're just uniting, you're taking advantage of the larger view to your garden.
Right. And doing some digging. And, of course, we all put things in some place, and it takes about sometimes 10 times before we figure out where they really belong. So we have to be okay with that.
Yeah. I tell people my plants think they're on roller skates sometimes.
I move them around,
It's not like you're painting with pastels. This is a living, growing. You have to adjust things. It's a very flexible, non-static art form.
Right. Well, and I want to talk about collecting. And you kind of hinted at this, about the idea of getting into a genus of plants or whatever, and making that one of the sort of layers that helps things hang together. One of the elements of repetition. And you're a, shall we say, passionate collector. You have collections of narcissus and hellebores and snowdrops and, galanthus and lots of collections. But you didn't collect them to then like line them out like in a farm kind of setting to be some study collection or reference thing, right? You're incorporating them. So give us the pitch for why we want to collect something as gardeners.
That is a topic that is very near and dear to me. I am a plantsman.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm guilty as charged. I have a lot of collections. It's like, you know, I like Margaret Roach, so I like all of her family. So they're all welcome to right. Thanksgiving dinner. If I like a galanthus, I tend to like all of them and try to explore them. But I don't want my garden, and I hope it doesn't, I don't want it to read like a plant zoo. You know, it's not about
right. The
overall garden comes first. So I chose to house my collections in a particular style. I would guess you would describe my style as a cottage garden.
Yeah.
With a naturalistic planting. But I want it to look more like plant communities that relate to one another, not like a botanical garden per se. Nothing's really labeled in the garden except the Galanthus collection. I want to take it as the larger view of the garden to make it look, you know, the picture of what I'm trying to achieve. And then I house my collections within that. Okay. Mm-hmm. I work the collections in where they fit in the space and where they fit in the garden due to environmental conditions. Like the drier collections go in one area, the wetter collections go in another. I'm constantly amazed by what plants do and how they relate to one another. Take the genus Geraniaceae, geraniums. If you see lots of geraniums in your garden, that is a form of repetition as well. Now, there's a fine line between being boring and repetition. You don't want to be boring. You want to repeat that in a kind of a clever way by putting it with another plant, putting it with another texture. There's so much you can do with it. I'm not afraid, and I'm of collecting. It's just how you put them together I want people to consider.
Right. So not, as you say, making a zoo where they're in their individual displays, but, you know, segregated, so to speak, but integrating them. And you even use them in pots and so on and so forth. We have about maybe 3 minutes left, and I just wanted to dig a little bit more into that. You said, when we did the time story, you said, if there's something you love, do a little exploration of that genus and then extend the bloom time of that favorite plant. So it's another way to stretch the seasons. Like, how many weeks or months of narcissus do you have, or of your snowdrops, of your galanthus or hellebores? You have the longest possible enjoyment of that favorite item, right?
It's about how much pleasure you can wring out of one space, of one genera.
Yeah.
And you just try to do that. I have, you know, snowdrops blooming now. They will bloom all the way through the winter until April, okay, May. I do the same thing with iris. They start early on and go all the way to June. They'll start in late March, perhaps, and go all the way to June. So, again, if you like something, I started out planting everything early. Now I'm planting everything late, just trying to extend the season of what I love.
Right, right. Do you have any new plant obsessions that you're beginning collections of, or are you digging deeper into the established ones?
Confess. I'm still probably spending more than what I should on galanthus.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're expensive. The snowdrops are so expensive. Oh, my goodness.
And there's other things. I have a lot of flirtations with other genera, and then I become captivated with them.
But yeah.
They're like hellebores. They've been with me. That obsession's been with me forever. But there's always new plants. I've been recently, for a lot of my clients, doing meadow gardens. So some of the grasses I've been exploring.
Oh. Well, I'll want to talk about that the next time we get to speak, because that's something that I'm definitely very interested in and don't know enough about. So, David Culp, as I said at the beginning, we're going to have a giveaway of your most recent book, A Year at Brandywine Cottage, with the transcript of the show on awaytogarden.com. I'm so glad to catch up with you, and thanks for the tips, because I think it's a super important time to have one look at the garden as we take it apart, one more look at the garden as we take it apart, right, and make our spring to-do list.
Absolutely. That's why I'm madly planting bulbs. I'm paying forward at the spring, and I'm just always unless you think about what's, unless you're enjoying now and thinking about what's to come, you're behind the eight ball a little bit.
Yeah.
So, and I've enjoyed this morning talking with you. If you
think
the garden, the next best thing is a gardening friend talking about the garden.
And I'll also give a link with the transcript to your November 11th and your other ongoing garden design webinars, which are totally fun. So people can join you on that as well.
Fun, because I just put the final touches on the November garden.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was great. I'm up way too late doing it.
Oh, I can't wait. All right, well, I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Margaret. Always a pleasure.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in, too. Now, don't miss an episode, and you can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and on Stitcher. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.